You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Hey, welcome you back. Second hour is live and underway, and glad you are here. And Jeremy is up next in Atlanta. Hello, Jeremy. Great to have you on.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. So
thank
I
you.
Called in the show back at the end of March and asked you about your thoughts about pushing the 2020 cross-divisional schedule to 2021, particularly with the Bama versus UGA game. But today I want to ask you about your thoughts on pushing the season back to the spring. As of today, July, 14th, do you think it would be more likely that the season starts on time, or do you think that Sankey and the other Power 5 commissioners would consider pushing the season back to October with only conference games, or even push the season back to the spring? I can't really see them canceling this season with so much on the line with money and other factors that help run these athletic departments.
By the way, I thought of that call that you had many, many times, Jeremy. In fact, my wife said, had heard it, and she said, you need to call that guy and tell him, because I kind of blew right past your point, but I hear you now loud and clear. Back to your question. I cannot see them canceling the season now. I know they're watching the numbers, and the projections are that the numbers will keep going up. This trend is not yet plateaued. So what I think they'll do is they'll delay, hoping to get some good news before they make a decision on the season. Spring is not a good option. Nobody likes spring.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you taking my call.
Jeremy, thank you. Call back soon. Really appreciate it. Shannon is up next, also in Georgia. Shannon, thanks. Great to have you on.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today, bud?
We are doing well.
So I listened yesterday after I called in. I guess you spoke with the doctor yesterday, and you said he sounded like he was biting his tongue when you brought up my comment about the virus ending on November the 3rd, November 4th in that region. And he said he was frustrated that folks couldn't follow science or weren't willing to follow science. And I just went back and went through some of the stuff that I've read over and talking about, you know, why some of us may have a problem following science. And I guess, Paul, it comes down to the constant back and forth between what's right and what's not, what's acceptable, what's not, what's a good idea and what's not. You know, Fauci was against the travel ban when the administration put it in place. Early on, he was against the masks. For months, the media went on about how HCL was not good for treating coronavirus. Then in July 3rd, even CNN came out with an article saying, hey, it's surprising, but it looks like it may actually help. And I guess the most recent thing was, you know, Fauci said the falling mortality rate was a false positive, that we shouldn't get our hopes up over a falling mortality rate because it wasn't actually a good sign. And I guess, and I'd just like to get your thoughts on this, Paul, you know, we first locked down with 14 days to flatten the curve. And now we're locked down with lockdown until there's a cure and there's no threat for anyone. And that was never what we were told by science going in. So I think that's why a lot of us, or why myself at least, have questions about trusting the science and the medical experts.
Well, Shannon, number one, I will agree with something you said. Nobody really knew what they were doing early on. And that's, to me, is baffling. I remember hearing about this virus in late December, early January, and everyone, including the people that were supposed to be monitoring it, didn't do a very good job. The mistakes early on don't concern me as much as what's happening today when we do know a little bit more about it. We're not locked down. You go to work. I go to work. We may be hesitant to do certain things, but most people are able to function fairly well right now. Not everyone, because a lot of businesses have been decimated.
They just announced today in the Metro Atlanta, several of the Metro Atlanta school systems have said they're going to start back virtual with no in-house classes. Everything will be virtual and online again. And, you know, I look at that, and I look at the effect that's going to have on a lot of kids in our state, and I don't think it's positive at all. And, you know, when we entered the whole thing of lockdown was to stop the curve, to flatten the curve and to stop the rampant spread. And then, you know, on top of that, Paul, and I talked about it with you earlier this week, you know, the thing that went on in Florida with all the false reportings of positives and things of that nature, I'm not even sure the science is accurate. What we're being reported is even accurate at this point. I mean, there's enough doubts and red flags that have been raised by anybody that's paying attention. And I'm sorry if it offends the doctor or anybody else for that matter. But the reality is if you're not realizing that there's some faults in the reporting and some faults in the numbers.
And Shannon, I don't have any doubt there is. I shared the story the other day about the young lady who made an appointment at, I think it was CVS, yes, could have been Walgreens, I really don't remember. And she canceled it, and they called her back with a positive test. I mean, I'm fully, I mean, I'm not trying to dispute any of that. I mean, the one thing I just don't know is, I mean, I do not believe this is a political virus. I think it's real. I'm not going to give you stats. I think the 137,000 people dying is somewhat distorted, if it's an accurate figure. You and I both will agree on that. But I can't, you know, why school systems can't open safely is really their issue. Do I think I don't think we reopened too soon. I think people were cavalier.
And I would agree with that, Paul. And I'm not saying the virus is not real. That's not what I'm saying at all. The virus is an issue and a medical problem. The problem that's happened is it's been politicized.
Listen, I think we agree on more than we don't agree on. The media has the media on both sides, if you'll hear me out, I think has an agenda. It's just the nature of the world that we live in right now, and this happens to be the only story going. The social injustice conversation is still there, but it is not as prevalent today as it was 6 weeks ago.
Well, when I look at the states that are continuing to stay locked down or that are reverting back to a lockdown, with the exception of maybe Texas, you look at it, it basically is coming down to a Democrat versus Republican thing. And that's unfortunate, you know, because instead of doing what's in the best interest of our country, we're doing what's in the best interest of gaining control of politics. And that's where I lose faith in the government, and I lose faith in the government spokesperson who's presenting the numbers, because I always wonder what's in it for them. Why are they presenting the narrative they're presenting the way they're presenting it?
Is
it
because let me ask you a question. Factual? I mean, sure. When it comes to the media, I get that the majority of the media in this country dislike the president. I think that stop me if you hear anything you don't agree with. Do you think it's entirely based on that premise that they are propagating these numbers?
I think it is based on the premise that a large part of it. I do. I absolutely do. Okay. I think a large part of the way the numbers are presented and the fact that they will only present the negative view or the numbers skewed in a negative manner. They don't talk about the recovery rate. They don't talk about the mortality rate. They don't talk about the fact that those they certainly don't talk about the fact that 44-45% of all fatalities have occurred over the age of, what is it, Paul, 70 and in nursing homes in the Northeast. They don't want to touch on those issues. The only issues they want to talk about is, will the case numbers continue to rise? Well, that's true with cancer or with tuberculosis or anything. The case numbers are always going to continue to rise. What's the rate of recovery? What's the mortality rate? And what's the real effect and what's the real threat to school age or people under the age of 35, 30, 40 years of age?
It's not very high.
Exactly. And so I wonder, the impact of shutting the country down is much more negative than the mortality rate on the folks that they're shutting down. You know, in the state of Georgia, I mean, we drive down the road. My wife and I just went to a big retail outlet, and I wore a mask when I went in there because they asked that you wear a mask now, and I'm not happy about it, but I did what I had to do. But we have numbers of businesses that are shut down that won't reopen, that will not reopen. And I just wonder, are we – I heard Trump say at one point, we can't make the cure worse than the disease. And I almost think that's where we're at. You know, we're not going to reopen in some states until there's a virus and there's a cure. That's just that obvious. You know, in the state of Oregon, they said back a couple months ago, she said nothing in September is going to take place. How did she make that call that early? You know, and so when I look at the science, I wonder sometimes if we're getting truth from science.
Well, I think they're all fair questions, and I have very little answers, but I do appreciate very much that you call. Hey, thanks for the call, Shannon. Always enjoy it. Doug is in South Carolina. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul. One good thing of optimism about this, I heard on Fox News yesterday, AstraZeneca, along with Oxford University in England, has in some of the final stages of testing a vaccine and an antidotal, and if they both work, and they could be out this fall, then that's going to make a lot of this, that, and the other go away. I mean, if they come up with a vaccine and they come up with an antidotal, then we're not going to have to worry about if we do this or we do that, we're going to be sick. Now, that's an if. It hasn't come out yet, but at least we need to look at the positive side of things.
Yeah, I mean, there is a great deal of positivity on the vaccine and treatment front. That's the biggest news, I think, of this last couple of days. I've seen three or four different reports. The one you said, there was another one out Monday.
Yeah, it was on Fox News. I watched the national feed of Fox, and it was on that.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good.
Another thing I wanted to tell you, if for some reason Clemson couldn't play South Carolina this year because of it, and I hope that ain't the case,
right?
That will bring the consecutive number of years that we have played the Gamecocks to 110.
Mm.
How many years has the Iron Bowl been consecutive played, Paul? Do you know?
I think they missed a couple years. The game was discontinued for many years. I'm pretty sure it's been originally started in the late 1800s. There was an interruption, and then it reconvened. I should know this. Maybe after World War II. Hey, thank you very much. We have to go to a break. A couple of guests are coming up. Great calls. We are back with much, much more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And we welcome you back. Great to have you here. More phone calls in a few minutes. A number of guests, including our next guest. He is Peter Burns from the SEC Network. He also does a morning radio show. So he has been talking about this subject that we're all talking about all the time. Peter, great to have you back on, and hope all is well.
Man, considering I've got my 8-month-old son strapped to me like Mr. Mom right now, I'm trying to make it. Every single day is a sprint. It seems like everything changes, Paul. It's crazy. Every morning you wake up and you're like, all right, what kind of news are we going to find out today? And it seems to shift that fast right now.
Well, the news of this day has been, and I'm still not sure what if they're binding, but the NCAA has put out some guidelines. They're fairly convoluted about what football teams are going to have to do. Any reaction to what they've done and what it all means?
You know what, Paul? It's interesting because you're right. I mean, the convoluted and kind of, you know, when I start diving into the details, it's very kind of vague and talks about, hey, no federal, you know, regulations and some things. it's almost like it feels to me, Paul, like the NCAA felt like they needed to put something out. Remember, they just got absolutely eviscerated a couple of weeks ago where they said, we respect the rights of all the universities and our member institutions, right? It was such a bland comment. And then it seems like, all right, we need to work. We need to put this together of some type of, you know, particulars when it comes to at least guidelines or best practices. Now, I would imagine that the NCAA has worked with the Power Five and all the schools to develop something like that. But I don't think, Paul, it's going to be a hard and fast rule. I think what it's going to be is, hey, here's what we've come up with in our conversations. But ultimately, I think it'll end up being the conferences that decide, hey, along those guidelines, this is what we feel comfortable doing. And I think they'll be somewhat the same, but there might be, I don't think it's a hard and fast rule.
Peter, you talk to a lot of people every day, and you're connected to SEC people and athletic directors and coaches around college football. Fans are looking for good news right now. You have any?
Yeah, I mean, you look at, you know, Oklahoma. Remember Lincoln Riley said, hey, I didn't want my guys coming back too early, and sure enough, they came back early July. That they've their last two rounds of testing, what, 178 different players tested over the 2 weeks? Not a single coronavirus positive test, right? Not a COVID positive test. Kentucky football, 166 members of the team, you know, between football players, staffers, and coaches, they had a goose egg. I talked to LSU. Remember, Paul, during this whole thing, that was a big headline on your show, and everybody is that when Clemson had come out with a bunch of players positive and the same thing that LSU had quarantined as many as 30 players, I was like, well, are we following up? Like, what has happened to all of these players that have, you know, have been quarantined and LSU's at full strength right now? So it seems to be obvious that, you know, what's happening and what these schools have done for college football have shown that the social distancing, the masking that they're doing, the common sense guidelines is at least working on the college football level. Now, albeit, well, there's not, you know, 30,000 kids on campus right now, but this should be a blueprint, and this should make college football, you know, the hierarchy feel better, saying, hey, listen, it can be done. We're doing it this way right now. The question is, can you keep that up when it seems like all these cases are kind of skyrocketing everywhere else?
And Peter, there was an interesting comment made this afternoon. Hunter Yerichek from Arkansas was talking to some media people, and he said, we I guess he means the NCAA, because they're the ones that made it. He said, we made a hasty decision in March to shut down. You look back, and there was a way to play spring sports with social distancing. And remember, you were in Nashville. Greg Sankey had the same thought. He was really stunned when the NCAA wiped out the entire spring as they were knocking off the NCAA basketball tournament. Do you think there's any merit to what he said?
Well, I think what it is was also just, hey, if we're all going to work in this together, why did the NCAA, which had, it's not like they didn't have everybody's phone number, couldn't have said back in March going, hey, we're going to do this and give everybody a heads up. And I kind of liken it, Paul, to the same situation that we heard the Big Ten announce that they were going to go to a conference-only schedule. I mean, I was told, you know, by several different people that all these commissioners were on these calls even as of that morning, and all of a sudden Big Ten says, hey, we're going to change, you know, we're going to go do this. And then the Pac-12, it's almost like everybody's trying to jump out of the airplane with parachutes, and they've all decided, hey, if we decide that we're going to jump way at the end, and they, you know, two people jumped off early. And it's just part of the issue of when you don't have a quote-unquote czar of college football. Much like how you don't have anything going on nationwide about testing and protocols, you're going to get a bunch of different ways to combat the problem, and that actually is the problem. I did find interesting today, and I just put it out on Twitter, if you saw this, Paul, that the your alma mater, Tennessee, just did a deal with Whoop. I don't know if you saw those. They're those wearable straps. And I thought that was kind of interesting that they're kind of doing that. Remember, the Whoop strap was what the PGA Tour players have now, because after one of the players found out that he was asymptomatic, but, you know, wearing one of these wearables actually helped them understand it a little bit more. So I'm curious to see if more college athletic programs kind of go down a route, something like that, to even enhance the safety that they can do, kind of building on what, you know, Alabama was doing with their conditioning early back in March.
Peter Burns with us. Peter, the ADs met Monday in Birmingham. We all know that. I haven't heard anything out of that meeting, and maybe you've heard more, that would indicate that anyone in that room did not want to figure out a way. And this is just isn't aspirational, but are continuing to find a way to get to the college football season. Tell us what you've learned from that mass meeting.
Yeah, I mean, the only, you know, I talked to, I kind of wanted to go, all right, if I don't go talk to an SEC school, let me talk to someone who's playing an SEC school. And that was the athletic director at the University of Charlotte here, Mike Hill. You know, he used to work for Jeremy Foley back at Florida, was familiar with these programs, and now he's scheduled to open up against Tennessee. And he says, listen, after the Big Ten went conference only, we called Tennessee and said, hey, where are we at with this? How do we feel? And he says, hey, we're still trying to make this happen, that they had scheduled a game and did not get anything from Tennessee saying, hey, you know, we're going to go to conference only, you need to reschedule. So they were still planning on playing that game. I think the one thing that I've taken from this, Paul, is how frustrated some coaches, assistant coaches, staff members have shared with me about how when they go on campus, they're doing everything right. You know, they're social distancing, they're wearing the mask, they're cleaning everything, they're doing everything to the T, and then they walk into their car after the day is over, and they drive by, and it seems like they're oblivious to everybody else, that everybody else is just playing by a different set of rules. And there's been frustration on the behalf saying, well, why are we doing all this stuff to make sure there's a college football season happening, yet our fans and the people living in our respective cities aren't doing the same? And I think that's been a sense of frustration that continues to boil over right now with these coaches and staff.
Yeah, and they've done everything they can, but I just wonder, and listen, the next two or three weeks, I think we're all guessless on what's going to happen, but whatever happens now is probably not going to impact that decision. I mean, do you think we're looking more toward a delay, or do you think there's still a realistic possibility of starting Labor Day weekend?
I would doubt if we would start Labor Day weekend, and that's just a hunch. Again, that's not just me talking to anybody and saying that. I just think that with the numbers being the way they are, and even just kind of trying to read through the lines of what Commissioner Sankey said about, hey, we need to be in a better spot, you know, is there an opportunity to push back a little bit? And I think that's why, you know, the league has decided, and I think other conferences, the ACC, the Big 12 as well, too, saying we don't need to make a decision right now. Like, if you're taking a test, you want as much time to study on the test and find out as much information before you put pen to pad. And I think that's the thing, is they're going to wait until last week in July or first week in August to say, what's the information we have? How can we do it? And if so, what's the best way of doing it? And if it ends up being conference only, it'll make for one of the most intriguing seasons. I mean, Paul, regardless, even if the pandemic wasn't here, this was already going to be the most wide open that the SEC had been probably in 30 years. You know, with Auburn being good, A&M having everybody coming, you know, a lot of youngsters coming back, LSU, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, even Tennessee having success. This was already going to be a crazy season, as my son agrees, as you can hear him right now. and now you add no spring ball. I mean, that's why I'm dying to hope that we have college football. Because this would be, I mean, this is a 30 for 30 story that's being written in front of our eyes every single day right now.
Well, I know you've got people calling you, but hey, thanks for coming on. Come back soon. Let's all get together one of these days soon.
I think that's an offer for you to babysit, and I will take you up on that offer.
I've got my mask. I'm ready. I'm not that far from you. I'm heading over there right now.
Hey, listen, Thomas likes kale as well, too, so he's in good shape. Thanks, man.
I got plenty of that. Thanks, Peter. Peter Burns joining us from the SEC Network. We are going to take a break. Mac Brown joining us a little bit later on. We'll take a break and get more of your calls as well.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flail.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we welcome you back. Great conversation there with Peter. Mark Emmert speaking today. He is, in case you forgot, the head of the NCAA. He's the president. You know, as the NCAA released guidelines, Emmert said, the data is going in the wrong direction. We need to get a much better handle on the pandemic before we can have fall sports. Well, yeah, you can fill in the blank on that one. David is in Ohio, and you are next up. Hello, David.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
That was tough since I was down in Columbus, Georgia. My wanted to know, how did you feel about Notre Dame if we go to an all-conference only? What does that do for Notre Dame? Is that going to eventually force them to go to join the ACC?
No, I mean, let's remember one thing about Notre Dame. Notre Dame is in the ACC in every sport but football, so they have a great relationship with the ACC. So I suspect, not that I really know anything, that Notre Dame will play a mostly ACC schedule. They already have 6 games booked. Jack Swarbrick, the athletic director, said yesterday he's been getting calls from all over the country. They have a game with Arkansas on the books, too, which there is a sentiment out there right now that we may get, at least in the ACC, SEC, at least one or two non-conference games. So I think Notre Dame will be in extremely good shape. Let's check out Big Country in Alabama. Hello, Big Country.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Hey, so earlier you had a lady call in from Houston, and that's when I called in, and she was talking about wearing masks and get rid of the pandemic in 4 to 8 weeks or get control of it. One of the things that she said, and you kind of agreed with her, was this was factual information. And I haven't seen anything yet that says wearing a mask is factual information that's going to stop this pandemic or stop the spread.
Are you serious? You haven't heard a healthcare professional recommend that a mask will lessen the spread?
Sure, I've heard many say recommend that it would. I've also heard many recommend, also doctors recommend, that masks are not even a good idea.
Well, so hey, Country, I have to stop you right there, okay? And I don't know that many. Well, I do know a few doctors. I've interviewed at least 3 or 4 epidemiologists. I happen to know a reasonably large number of physicians. And I don't know one of them who does not recommend wearing a mask. Have you been to the doctor since this all began?
I own a medical clinic, and I work with a doctor who's been a doctor for 40 years. Now, he believes in masks.
If you have been in a medical office, which I assume you have, you see anybody in there not wearing masks right now?
Every day. Myself is one of them. I don't wear a mask.
No, I did not ask you whether you wore a mask or not. I asked you if you have been to a medical office and seen any physician not wearing a mask?
I have not. I haven't been to any medical offices.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, I try to keep my life separate from my work, but I can tell you that if you go into any medical office, I have not been to one, by the way, I'm just relying on close sources here, that every medical professional is wearing a mask right now at every medical office, every legitimate medical office in this country.
No, I'm not disagreeing with that, Paul. I'm not even saying.
Why do you think the most learned people of medicine and science would be wearing a mask if they didn't think it was a good idea?
I'm not. Probably wearing a mask would be a good idea at any point in any year that we've been alive, because there's always something out there we can get.
No. I've been to that's absurd. That statement is absolutely absurd because I've never seen a doctor wear a mask yet, unless they were an infectious disease doctor or they were doing surgery or a dentist or something that would have a face covering. But I mean, normally doctors do not wear a mask.
I haven't seen that either. I'm not saying it's a bad idea.
Well, would you mind? I don't want to argue with you because obviously you know a great deal. But can you cite me one source that would back up what you're saying? Just give me a name. Give me the New England Journal of Medicine. Just give me something, okay?
Back up. What are you referring to?
I'm referring to your basic premise that you called in 6 minutes ago with.
Okay, and what was that?
You're gonna have to tell me. You're the one that came on the show and said that masks aren't that important.
That is not what I said. The lady that called in said that it was 100% factual that if we wore masks in 4 to 8 weeks, we'd be past this pandemic.
Well, and by the way, do you know who she was quoting? I do.
Who? Tell me who.
She was quoting Dr. Redfield, who happens to be the head of the CDC.
Okay, and the CDC also, in the very beginning, said...
I'm a sports talk show host, okay? I don't know all this stuff. I'm just asking you how I'm just asking you for your source, that's all. But I think I've gotten the impression that you know a great deal since you're in the medical profession. Let's talk to Mac next. Hey, Mac, go right ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon.
Paul, if you ever add a subtitle to your show, I'd like for you to make it the Paul Feinbaum Show and America's Barbershop.
A guy did a book about this show years ago, and he called it Great Call, Why the Feinbaum Show is America's Barbershop.
Well, that would be, I think that'd be a great title for it. One other thing before I get to my main point, you got a young guy named Logan that calls in. He seems like a pretty sharp kid, but every time he calls in, it reminds me of something that President Reagan once said. He said, it's not that liberals don't know anything, it's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And, that was a great line.
But I know that you're kind of partial to Vanderbilt University, and this past Sunday, Dr. Torres on NBC interviewed the head of vaccine research at Vanderbilt University, a Dr. Creech, along with four other pediatricians from around the country. And one of them was a Dr. Patel, and I think that she was from Houston. But the main point was all five of these pediatric doctors said that we needed to get our kids back in school, into the classroom. And I just thought, since I know you've had Dr. Sag on a good bit, and I don't want to try to besmirch him in any way, but I live in Alabama. He's on TV all the time. I think if he and Shifty Adam Schiff were together, they'd probably knock each other over getting to the camera. So I'm just going to tell you.
I have to tell you, I really think that's an insult to Dr. Sag that he could run as fast as Adam Schiff.
Well, you're probably right. But at any rate, I just think it'd be great if you could reach out to Dr. Creech and maybe get someone.
Yeah. By the way, we've had a couple of them on. I just happen to know Dr. Sag, if you know a good epidemiologist, send him or her our way.
Yeah. Maybe Mrs. Feinbaum could call down to the old school and get him to come on.
I'll ask her. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. We're heading to a break here on the New England Journal of Medicine Hour. Much more to come. We'll talk about pediatrics after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We welcome you back, and John is up next in Mississippi. John, thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, too.
Thank
First
you.
Of all, I would like to reply to Big Country that you had just had on, and also to Shannon, who you had on a little bit earlier. First of all, I wear a mask everywhere I go. Not for my sake, but your old man. I'm not worried about getting it personal. But my father is 71 years old, has had heart troubles. For him, nieces and nephews under the age of 5, I wear it for them. And it always makes me so mad when I go in somewhere, especially when they have the wear the face mask required, and people don't wear them. I mean, it kind of makes no sense. Now, are they effective? Yeah, I've heard medical officials say they're effective. I went to the doctor today. I went through, when I came in the door, my fever was checked. I got all these questions asked. And then I went on back to where my appointment was. And before I went in, I got my fever checked again. I got asked all these questions before they would see me. They do that to make sure, you know, I don't pass it on to somebody else if I have a sin. I mean, for example, you know, the speed limit on most interstates, 70 miles per hour. That's not a suggestion. I mean, why do we have speed limits? To protect people. So we don't want to wear a mask. To me, that's very, very selfish. Because you're telling me that you don't care about other people's lives. You don't care about, you know, the older people that you'll come in contact with, or the people you come in contact with will come in contact with 70-year-old people or older. I mean, I don't know. It just don't make sense to me, Paul.
Well, and by the way, I think when I was talking to the individual, I mean, there are some studies out there that you know, wearing a mask, I mean, if you're beyond 6 feet from someone, the mask may not make a whole lot of difference. But you're right. It's just a respect thing. And you know, to suggest that doctors, I mean, you saw it today. I mean, you're not getting in a legitimate medical practice without having your temperature taken before you walk in the door.
Right. I mean, that's absolutely correct. You know, and while I'm in there, you know, they have the seats, you know, 6 feet apart. But like yesterday, I was in this little store, you know, national chain. You know, I'm the only one out of 15 customers in the store that has on a mask. You know, even though it has clearly wear a face mask. And those people weren't social distancing. They're coming up close to me. And I'm like, whoa, first, you know, and I have to step up to them and say, whoa, you know, look physically, but I'm not going to step up to somebody without a mask. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, I'd have to tell them, get back, you know, because I don't want to give it to, no, my father.
No, I'm glad you said that because, I mean, we all, whether it's our husbands or wives or parents or aunts and uncles or grandparents, I mean, we all, there's somebody in every family that has a condition, a pre-existing
right.
condition. And I, you know, I couldn't live with myself, okay. And I know you couldn't either. And by the way, I don't want to argue with people about this because I'm not a medical professional. I'm a talk show host. But
right.
it bothers me, though, because there are people listening who may hear Big Country or whatever his name is, and they say, well, okay, I won't wear a mask, and then somebody ends up getting sick or dies. I don't want that to happen.
Right. I mean, to me, it's just totally selfish. You know, if you, I don't know, it just don't make sense to me. Oh, one other thing before I let you go. You know, I noticed, like, you know, my name just popped up on there without a picture. If you want more viewers, you would think, you know, you'd want a picture of me. You'll get more viewers.
Well, John, I'm going to put you on. We want a picture of everyone. Let me put you on hold, and we'll get your picture because we couldn't turn that one down. Hey, thanks for the call. We'll be right back. Mac Brown is coming up next.